The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. As often it seems to happen on this program, we get right in the middle of something and our end of the program catches up with us and we have to stop at an awkward place, and that happened last time. We were looking at some comments that had been made by Edward P. Tryon in an article that appeared in the New Scientist in March of 1984. The title of the article was "What Made the World?" And this man is a professor of physics at Hunter College and the University of New York, the City College of the University of New York. I had read two comments. Let me go back again. For those of you that were listening, let me review that, refresh that in your memory, and some of those that may not have been listening, you'll at least get some of the background of what we were talking about. First comment was this, quote, "In 1973, I proposed that our universe had been created spontaneously from nothing," that is, ex nihilo, from nothing, the Latin, "as a result of established principles of physics. This proposal variously struck people as preposterous, enchanting, or both," and end quote. It strikes me as preposterous simply from the standpoint that all of the processes we see around us are producing degeneration rather than creation of new things. But that is a topic for another discussion. We've already spent some time when we're looking at evolutionary theories talking about that. Now, the second comment was this, quote, "So my proposal of creation ex nihilo was accompanied by a prediction that our universe is finite and hence closed," end quote. And that, of course, follows logically, that if there was a time of creation and you don't have a continuing creation, then there has to be some kind of boundary to the universe itself, large but not infinite, a finite universe rather than infinite universe. Now, the next comment here, quote, "So I conjecture that our universe had its physical origin as a quantum fluctuation of some pre-existing true vacuum out of true vacuum or state of nothingness," end quote. Now, we ran across this comment before, and I expressed myself to you at that point. Again, without trying to be unduly nasty, this comment, in my opinion, is absolute foolishness. The notion that a vacuum is going to have some kind of quantum fluctuation that is going to produce the matter of our universe, to me, is absolute foolishness. Again, you can respond to the notion as you choose to, and obviously there are scientists who are quite open to it. Now, the next quote by Dr. Tryon. Quote, "If cosmic inflation occurred, the questions posed earlier as challenges to creation ex nihilo find ready answers. The unnecessarily large size of our universe is a result of that early inflation." Again, if I interrupt the quote, this takes into consideration a problem that exists, and I'm not inclined to stop and try and spend time discussing it here. Now, back to the quote. "The original quantum fluctuation created only a microscopic universe, which without inflation would never have reached macroscopic, let alone cosmic proportions. Inflation gave rise to the rapid expansion and converted the initial microcosm into a cosmos," end quote. Again, my inclination is not to spend time here. You've heard it. You can think about it, reject it, do whatever you want to with it. But I've read all of those things to get down to his final comment, quote, "In this scenario, the hot Big Bang was preceded by a cold big whoosh," end quote. And I have read the statement accurately. "In this scenario, the hot Big Bang was preceded by a cold big whoosh," end quote. Now, aside from the fact that there were things that had to precede the Big Bang, so it really is not coming from nothing. You have here an astronomer who is, in order to support his own theory, is making a rather interesting comment about that. Now, one other. uh, a gentleman by Petrusky, Ben Petrusky, in an article entitled, Why is the Cosmos Lumpy? This was published in Science, June of 1981. I've mentioned before, a couple of programs ago, I think we looked at a very brief description of the Big Bang. That brief description of the Big Bang had to do with the compression of all of the matter of this universe into a pinhead size lump. There was an explosion, and then presumably you had a homogeneous expansion away from the site of the initial explosion. And this lumpy business is talking about the fact that we have solar systems and galaxies and, in some instances at least, unbelievably large areas of the universe with nothing in them, which is not the kind of thing you would expect from the Big Bang, and is the reason that some people have disagreed with it, and the reason that many people are trying to dream up some kind of a way of accommodating the actual structure of our universe to fit it in with some kind of notion about the Big Bang. To this point, that has been unbelievably unsuccessful. But at any rate, that was what was involved. Now, this is the comment I want you to note here. Ben Petrusky, quote, few cosmologists today would dispute the view that our expanding universe began with a big, hot bang, about 18 billion years ago. Paradoxically, no cosmologist could now tell you how the Big Bang, the explosion of a super-hot, super-dense atom, ultimately gave rise to galaxies, stars, and other cosmic lumps. Again, we've spent more time on the Big Bang than I had intended to. I've expressed myself about the theory itself. I think it's very foolish. But here, I want you to note the conclusion from an individual who is knowledgeable about the theoretical physics or astronomy that gives rise to that idea. Let me read the last part of that statement again. Paradoxically, no cosmologist could now tell you how the Big Bang, the explosion of a super-hot, super-dense atom, ultimately gave rise to galaxies, stars, and other cosmic lumps, end quote. And that is quite true. So you have all of the time spent in devising a theory, dreaming it up, in some cases, acknowledgement by the author of the problems with it, but inevitably other astronomers who are certainly not shy about disagreeing with it. But we've come back to the same point we arrived at before, that there simply is no explanation for how our universe has come into existence apart from the idea of an omniscient, omnipotent creator God who created it at some point in the past. And again, this ought to be some source of comfort, perhaps help, to those of you who accept the biblical teaching about this as at face value without trying to embellish it in some way. Now, perhaps a good way to wind all of this up is simply to look at some statements that are made, some of them having to do with the idea of the Big Bang, some of them other things, but I think they may be a good way for us to summarize all of this. A man by the name of John Horgan, in an article entitled Universal Truth, Scientific American, published in 1990. Quote, James Peebles views the ongoing surge in observations as a source of joy, not despair. The observations may eliminate many theories, but eventually, given the abundance of talent and creativity in cosmology, they will spawn new theories with far more explanatory power. Again, I make the observation to you that theories do not explain anything. If they are good theories, they can describe but not explain. Back to the quote. In the meantime, cosmologists and the rest of us may have to forego attempts at understanding the universe and simply marvel at its infinite complexity and strangeness, end quote. Now, in my opinion, this is a very sensible response to much of the theories, the views, the pictures, the models, all of the kind of stuff that we've been talking about. And you just have to back up and understand. We're not going to understand the universe. We cannot, as Hawking talked about, understand the mind of God. So we simply note as much as we can, gain as much information as we can, and then simply marvel at the complexity and, in some respects, the strangeness of the thing that we see. A man by the name of McCrae, W.H. McCrae, wrote an article entitled Cosmology After Half a Century, published in Science in 1968. There are two or three statements in his article that are, again, probably helpful in summarizing some of the things that we have tried to cover in these programs. Again, I see our time is getting away from us, and so I think I will not begin these quotes from McCrae at this point. What we have done on this program is simply continue our looking at observations of scientists, astronomers in some cases, and noting their efforts to try and provide some kind of an answer to the question, how can nothing give rise to something? And the answer, as we have seen consistently, is simply that it's not possible for that to happen. You can have people that dream these things up. You can have people that believe in what the theories are saying. But the fact is they're not scientific. They are not true, as no theory can possibly be true. And they do not, in fact, supply suitable answers to the problem of where the universe came from. And we simply do not have a better answer than what we find in the scripture.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614. In the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.